Michigan Attorney General Dana Nessel announcing yesterday her intent to sue the major fossil fuel companies in the nation for their role in changing Michigan's climate and threatening the state's environment. She's saying that they knowingly profited, still knowing that it could cause climate change, and that they also failed to disclose and that they were engaged in climate change denial for far too long, and that even when there is evidence that they did understand what was going on, they failed to do anything to mitigate it or correct it. Let's learn more about the goals of this lawsuit with Richard Wiles. He is president of the Center for Climate Integrity. Mr. Wiles, good morning.
Morning.
So exactly what's the aim here? I mean, these things, you know, get kind of bogged down in the courts. Is it, first of all, to send a message to the fossil fuel industry that they need to be doing more to mitigate what consequences of the fossil fuels they're producing?
Yeah, I think the goal of this suit, which is, of course, not yet filed, but we assume it's going to be like the other nine attorney generals who filed, is to get the oil companies to stop lying about their commitment to solving climate change and to pay for the damages that they knowingly caused. They knew about climate change, knew their products would cause climate change about 50 years ago or so, maybe even longer ago. But instead of doing the right thing, they mounted this massive disinformation campaign, denied the problem for decades. Then it was too late to deny, you know, and it was so obvious that climate change was real, now they lie about the solutions. So the goal is to make them pay for that, literally pay for the damages and the adaptation measures that communities across Michigan are going to have to pay for, and also to get them to stop lying about their commitments to solve the problem and to admit, you know, that their problem, that their products are the main cause of the problem.
Richard, with the Supreme Court dismissing a landmark climate lawsuit back in 2011, you know, there's a lot of skepticism about the potential success of a state-level litigation. How do you assess Michigan's chances of winning this legal battle, considering past legal precedent?
That 2011 case is basically the reason that these cases are filed in state court. That case basically sort of shut the door on federal cases. It didn't exactly shut the door, but it made it, you know, much more difficult for these cases to move forward in federal court. And that's why all of them have been filed in state court. So like the tobacco cases that these cases are modeled after, or the opioid cases, state court is the optimal and the correct venue or jurisdiction for these cases to be held in. So in fact, there was a decision about a year ago by the Supreme Court that denied the industry's attempt to move all of these cases to federal court. So we think state court is where they should be and where they have the most best chance of success.
So, I mean, you're talking about the costs of fossil fuels, and that's fine. But there are also benefits, obviously. I mean, it's an affordable way to heat your home. It's an affordable way to make sure you have mobility to get to work. And that's what the fossil fuel companies were providing Americans over the last century as well. So you're kind of charging them with a failure to act. I guess my question is, what do you believe they should have done once the knowledge of the consequences did become apparent? To tell America, sorry, you're going to have to go cold turkey? What would have been a reasonable reaction on their part?
The reasonable reaction when they really realized in the 1970s and 80s that their products, in their words, would cause catastrophic climate change. That's what they knew was coming. But what they should have done is what Exxon.
Well, wait a minute. You said that they denied. If you're telling me in the 70s they knew about this?
No, these are internal memos they're writing to each other, to the CEOs. And initially, in the, you know, back in the 1970s, before climate change was really an issue, you know, they weren't actively denying. It's only when it became a real issue that they began to really deny it. What they should have done at that point when they knew was to build on what at the time at Exxon in particular was a very well-developed alternative energy program within the company. You know, back in the 70s, Exxon was a leader in solar and battery technology.
Well, they're still a leader in carbon capture technology investment, aren't they? Exxon and Shell both?
That technology has its issues. Let's just put it that way. I mean, it might be a part of some component of slowing down the impact.
But to that point, they're trying to be part of a solution.
They're saying they want to be part of the solution. But what they're doing, in fact, is investing in more and more drilling and more production, which is going to clearly cause the world to miss all of the targets that scientists have said are the ones that we need to meet. But what they could have done, what's interesting, when you read their documents from the 70s and 80s, you realize that, you know, they back then they considered themselves energy companies, not just oil and gas companies. But once they realized the magnitude of the threat to the business, they dropped all of those investments. Obviously, Exxon no longer considers itself a solar energy company or a battery producer. So what they should have done back then was, you know, begin the transition to become a more diversified energy company starting in the 70s and 80s. And then the glide path to, a renewable energy future would have been much smoother and we would have been in a much different place. It's very important about these suits. This is a very important thing to understand. These cases do not in any way attempt to curtail oil and gas production. Not in any way. What the suits are saying is stop lying about your commitments to solutions, stop lying about the problem, and pay for the damages.
Don't you think that'll be a consequence, though, Richard, if you're soaking them in legal fees and diverting investment away from carbon capture and future exploration? Isn't that kind of an ulterior motive, maybe?
I don't know what the ulterior motives here are, but I do know that the damages facing states like Michigan are going to be in the tens of billions of dollars. And so I guess the first step would be let's have the companies pay for the damages that they've caused. They make a lot of money. You know, if they can afford that, great. But the basic fairness issue is that, look, Michigan taxpayers shouldn't pay for whatever the gas prices are at the pump, plus all of the damages that these companies have knowingly caused. That's just simply it. It's so, you know, if the companies are really committed to the solutions they say they are, then they'll be able to pay for those damages, transition to a renewable energy future, and everything will be fine. If they're really just committed to more and more damaging climate change, then maybe those costs will get so high that it'll force a change in their business model. You know, I'm not an expert in, you know, oil industry business models, honestly.
Some contend that these lawsuits against fossil fuel companies are just a misuse of legal resources. Should the climate policy be determined by Congress?
Yeah, I mean,
instead of the courts.
Our view, I think, and everyone's view, this might be the one thing we agree with oil companies on, is that climate policy should be decided by the Congress. But these questions of liability for lying and for the damages resulting from that lying should be resolved by the courts. Two separate issues. They proceed on two separate tracks. But let's just, you know, if it doesn't, I think that it's fair to say that the oil industry has a pretty strong hold on whatever the Congress is going to do. We're not going to see damages addressed through the Congress. So let's have them addressed to the courts, which is a more appropriate venue for those kind of questions. So two separate questions.
Yeah.
Industry would like to have you just ignore the financial damages, just forget about the lying, and let's focus everything on the Congress, where they have, as I think we can all admit, a pretty good chance of winning. So, yeah, let's engage the courts on the damages side.
You know what? While they produce the fossil fuels, and in doing that, they create their own carbon footprint, obviously. But they weren't the end user. I was the guy that burned them. I was the guy that created the carbon in my furnace and in my car. But there were other big users, utilities, manufacturers, things like that. Do you think at some point, as we try to get accountability and damages, that you'll go after the end user who actually burned it?
I don't. You mean like, so under that scenario, you would say, grandma heating her home in the winter.
No, I'm thinking more
really
about the large utilities.
Actually, utilities were also involved in a lot of the deception, but they are regulated under the Clean Air Act. So there's no legal mechanism, at least that I'm aware of, that would, that would allow this kind of damage case to proceed against utilities. But the products that the companies make are not regulated in the same way under the Clean Air Act. Thus, they're subject to liability, like any consumer product that's made out there. So that's basically how that works.
We saw with the tobacco lawsuits, it can be a huge windfall for the state. And then the question becomes, how do you use those dollars for the public good? Richard Wiles, we thank you for your insights on this.
Thanks a lot for having me on, guys.
He's president of the Center for Climate Integrity. Just to fill in the other part of this, the 70s were very fraught, you know, because in addition to apparently they knew about this, but didn't know anything about it.
Right.
The Saudis also had a gun to our head and we're strangling our oil through their embargo. Yes. And people on the other side were telling oil companies, produce more. Mm-hmm. We need more domestic production. And they still are. Time for Automotive Views with Jamie Butters. It's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. Learn more at MichiganBusiness.org.
Is Nissan falling back into some old bad habits? It may not always be obvious in Metro Detroit, but the Nissan brand has been through quite a journey. Former chairman Carlos Ghosn was always pushing for more sales in the U.S., trying in vain to beat Honda in this market, as it did everywhere else in the world. After his arrest and dismissal, Nissan focused on higher margins over volume gains. But this year it found itself with too much inventory, and rather than let it sit too long on dealership lots, it's boosted fleet sales, revived controversial dealer incentives called stair steps, and this month it told dealers they could advertise vehicles at prices below invoice. Some dealers are afraid that the efforts to clear inventory will erode brand equity and pricing power. There's nothing wrong with selling affordable vehicles, but U.S. Nissan dealers have been on a roller coaster, and they don't want to be taken for a ride. With this week's Automotive View, I'm Jamie Butters, host of the Daily Drive podcast and executive editor of Automotive News.